You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I dropped an amazing episode with Dom Grimal of The Last Felony, Ion Dissonance, and Cryptopsy. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
Hello, good people of the interwebs. I am back, and I'm here to tell you that this episode is brought to you by Sinusoid. If you missed the last episode, that one was from the founder, owner, CEO, all that stuff of Sinusoid, Mr. Andy Kim. He's a wonderful dude, providing wonderful products to all you wonderful people. And they've been a longtime sponsor of the show, and, I mean, 100-year warranty on the cables, top-notch customer service, excellent products, as I said before, and the ability to create any kind of cable you can think of in their custom cable builder. Losing it, guys. Or if you don't see it there, you can email them. It's all, if they don't have it on the website, there's a good chance they can figure out how to get what you need. So go to sinusoid.com, support the show, support them, and treat yourself. Most importantly, treat yourself. This episode is also brought to you by the Fear the Riff Expo, coming at you, New York City, August 11th. That's a Saturday. It's on in August this year. I had to mix it up a little bit. So I'll be flying down. We'll probably be doing some more Tone Mob VIP type stuff for all of you wonderful people. So shoot me an email at info@tonemob.com. We'll make sure and make the arrangements for that. Again, Fear the Riff Expo, Brooklyn, New York. We got all kinds of amazing companies going to be there. We got Fender. We got, I can't even remember. There's so many. Fuzzrocious is going to be there. Boss is going to be there. Earthquaker. I mean, the list is huge. So come on down and let's do a little fist bump. Fear the Riff Expo, Saturday, August 11th. Be there or be square. Okay, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the ToneMob.com podcast, show about guitar tone and the people behind it. I'm your host, Blake Weiland, and with me today I have none other than longtime Tone Mob dude, community member, what do we want to call it? Sean Wright of Lollygagger Effects.
Yeah, instigator. No.
Instigator?
No. Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, how are you?
You know, as we were just talking briefly before, I'm trying to not be angry about how hot it is, considering how cold it was this winter.
Yeah, kind of in the same boat. You know, it's like, if I wanted to live in California, I'd live in California, you know?
So that's true.
Just all of a sudden decided to be 90 degrees or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm pretty close here, too.
Yeah. Where is here for the listeners? I know I'm going to ask you a lot of questions today that I already know the answer to, just because we've interacted in the Facebook communities and whatnot for so long. But
this is for the listeners, yes.
That's right. So
I am based in northern Michigan. If you were to look at the mitt, I'm by the pinky.
Okay. It is a mitt, isn't it?
Yeah, you could tell people from Michigan because they point to their hand when they tell you where you're from.
That's funny. I never noticed that. That must be a very local thing. I've never heard
of it. It's a very
before.
Michigan thing, yes.
Nice. Born and raised?
Born and raised in Michigan, but I was born outside of greater Detroit, and then we moved up to northern Michigan, I think, in 77, I think. So for the most part, most of my childhood and, of course, my adulthood.
Right here?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, why don't we start off, like, that's probably a good place to start off would be the classic, what's your musical backstory and how did it get you to kind of doing the things you're doing today?
Musical backstory, I had a couple of friends in high school, matter of fact, one of my good friends who I'm still friends with, had a really cool guitar, and I would go over his house and he would jam, and I was like, I want to play guitar, that's really cool. And then I tried playing guitar and I'm like, I'm really bad at this. So then for some reason thought, if I'm bad at guitar, I could probably be better at drums, which is not the case at all. I was a horrible drummer.
Yes.
Yeah, horrible drummer. So I think I just bit down and figured out the guitar thing. And me and my brother both play. So it was kind of cool to have somebody growing up that you could jam with. And then, you know, like your typical thing, high school bands, swapping gear, all the stuff that, we all do. And, that was pretty much up until my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then what? Oh.
Oh. Okay. You want me to do the long haul.
The story doesn't end there.
Yeah, well, obviously. That's true. What I ended up, I went to school with my wife and, we were friends for probably 10, 11 years. And, we started dating and we got married. And then one day, miserable at my job, her waiting to do something new, a change. And then I moved to Minnesota and got a degree in electronics, specifically music electronics. And I got my associates there. So that's where my electronic background of gear comes from.
I see. And I know, like, you didn't stay in the music electronics, though. Didn't you work for... It seems like I remember you posting somewhere you worked for a company that was well known for a while.
I when I got out of school, by that time, we had my daughter, and there are never mistakes or surprises.
That's right.
We had a surprise. So that kind of cut my, invitation to be a glorified roadie at the time. So, I ended up doing a lot of tech work for a lot of different stores, in Minnesota, but then we moved back to Michigan and I did a lot of tech work there as well. But one of my first jobs is, I got a job with, Naylor Amplification.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. And I did that for a while. And for the longest time for me, I was always in my school. It was very comprehensive, the first year, you learned just electronics. And then the second year was, based on the theory, learning more skills, but also doing a lot of hands-on stuff. And a lot of people gravitated toward the digital stuff. I mean, because this is what, 98, 97? And, you know, digital was just starting to really become a useful product as opposed to a toy. And right. So everybody wanted to do digital. I just wanted to play with old basements. I mean, it's like, I'm an analog guy. So I wanted to do amplifiers. That was my thing. And I between doing the tech work, mods, building some myself, and then working for Naylor, and then later on working for Gitron, you know, I got my fill on that. And by that time, baby number two came along, and we were living downstate at the time, and then we moved up north. And then I realized you can't make a living doing that and having two children. So I basically bowed out and went into the industrial electronics field, which is okay. What I'm still doing to this day.
Right. But also something else. A little something called lollygagger effects came along. How did that come about?
Well, like I said, I've been wanting to do build amps, and you know, a little foreshadowing. We will be there sometime, just not right now. But
nice.
What I wanted to do was get my foot in the door, and after years and years of mods tearing apart all the old and vintage gear and seeing what was good and what was not, or maybe something good but could be better, I'd had all these ideas in my head, and I'd said, what the heck, I'm going to design a new pedal. And what I came up with was the concept for the Canalia, mm-hmm. which was our big foray. And doing that and having those units sell, I basically kind of made a company. I didn't really set out to make a company as much as I just wanted to make some product.
Right.
But, you know, after so many people keep, you know, I guess a bad word would be hound, but, you know, saying like, I want one. So we started the company in 2012. And, mm-hmm. But the first 2 years was really basically on a hobby level. I mean, when I had time, or I would tell people X amount of weeks because, you know, I got other stuff I got to do too. And it wasn't until like 2016, late 15, that, you know, we turned in LLC, and then we became more involved in putting the product out. And that's kind of when Colette, my wife, came aboard. And it was a godsend, because even though, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but the exterior concept of lollygagger, she has way more aesthetic design and quality than I do. So mm-hmm. It really worked out where she could do that, and I can do the design, circuitry, and the insides and the assembly and all that.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, for those that don't know, maybe we can kind of talk about the outside of them and what is different about them compared to most companies.
Well, it's not anything new. The only thing kind of new about it is that we decided to do it in a production run, is that our flagship, our Canalia, is in a wooden enclosure, and it's CNC cut. So it's got bracing, and so the strength factor is, it's very hardy. We don't have any problems with any, you know, destruction. I mean, unless you wear jack boots and you jump up and down on it 150 times, but it's real durable. And then we wanted to do some really cool aesthetic looking things. And that's when Colette came in, and then we started doing figured tops. So we right now have a special line, which is our figured wood line. And then we have a standard line, which is just hard rock maple. It still looks beautiful. You just don't have the added bling that you would with the special.
Right. I mean, it seems like I recall somewhere that
there was some concerns about it being wood raised, and you responded by parking a vehicle on it.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I was mowing the lawn, and it was a hot day for spring, and I had a couple barley pops, and when I have a few beers, I start thinking in my head, and oh, by the way, don't try this at home. I told Colette, I said, I'm really, and I was just kind of being a pissy about the whole thing, but I was like, I'm really tired of people giving me, you know, issues about the wooden box thing. So I said, what the heck? So I put it, drove my car up on it.
Right.
And I didn't even use, a ramp. And the thing is that the first part of it, you can actually see the box going across the, mm-hmm. you know, concrete. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to prove a point. Right. But then the tire finally gets up on top of it. And, you know, I think it's roughly on that side of an axle is roughly about 500 pounds, if not more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then one guy came out and said, yeah, but it don't have switches on it. So and then I got Michael, one and I put switches on it and I backed over that. It's just like, it's never good enough.
Doesn't matter if it's an aluminum or a wood enclosure, your switches are going to be at risk regardless if you really are parking vehicles on your pedals.
Correct. I mean, but we were able to, you know, drive over it and it was still intact and no problems. But so the hardest part the whole thing about the wood concept came is that, you know, I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes I just have these thought processes where I just kind of let myself, you know, go into a different place. And I thought, you know what, I would like to try to do this concept. And a friend of mine who was out in California at the time, he still is. I'm not using him anymore because, but anyway, he was doing he was doing woodworking, actually had a nice CNC workshop in his garage. And, his name was Bob Savage. And I talked to Bob and over probably about 3 or 4 weeks of, you know, back and forth. And we got our first demo. And it looked great, but there were some things that needed to be changed, nothing major. But then, unfortunately, Bob decided he didn't want to do wood anymore. He had bad allergies. So it can wreak havoc. So now I'm having him done a half an hour away from where I live. So it really kind of worked out.
Nice. Well, they do look really good. I remember, like, the first time you and I had any like direct online correspondence, I believe it was mm-hmm. through Instagram, and your handle was just your name. And I was like, who's this guy? And I was like, oh, look at these pedals. And I think we had like this weird conversation where I was like, yeah, you should really make it your brand name, you know, on the Instagram.
And it was so funny because I didn't do Instagram until I heard you on the podcast about 2 years ago. I remember you being emphatic about if it wasn't for Instagram, I would not be in the position that I am right now. And I'm thinking to myself, you mean the place that shows girls doing duck faces and mom's apple pie? And I was like, how is that helping? You know? And that's mm-hmm. what forced me to kind of take a look at it and went, oh, wait a minute. This is a lot more different the potential is a lot more different than I thought. So that, and you saying, you know, you should probably put your company name on there. It was like a learning steps, but it was a big deal for me. It was definitely a game changer for us.
Yeah, I it's still my favorite social platform, by a long shot, especially for the kind of stuff we do. It's a lot mm-hmm. easier to just make your feed into what you want it to be. Granted, it's had mm-hmm. some challenges since I first started. I don't like it as well as I used to, but I definitely, it's still my favorite platform by a long ways. It's just enjoyable to interact on for the most part. And what's weird is while there are a lot of trolls, it seems like a lot less for whatever reason than other platforms. And I don't know if that's because like people that follow you is mostly, you know, mostly because they're interested in what you're doing. So they're not going to, you know, have a bunch of negative things to say or what. Don't get me wrong. There can be like anything, but it's just like I just very seldom get told to kill myself on there versus some other, versus well, YouTube or something.
Well, I got to tell you, I think it's each social platform has kind of different kind of vibes. I think the vibe on Instagram is a really healthy vibe. I mean, yeah, you'll get your, you know, your asses that say stuff sometimes, but I think the community in itself is kind of polices itself. So you don't get nearly as much as that as you would like. I mean, Twitter and YouTube are like, they're like the Wild West. There are no sheriffs. It's like, you know, anything goes. And that's why I pretty much just limit myself from that because, I mean, I understand there are people that have to use those platforms for whatever they're doing, but, I just don't go down that road. It's all I can do to just keep on top of the little stuff that I do right now, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I see why those other ones are important, and YouTube especially, because it's like just, you know, it's like having your, you know, literally having your own TV channel, basically. Mm-hmm. I understand why it's important and for brands and businesses to do that, but like on a personal daily use, my use for YouTube is to go to see the video I wanted to see, and then that's it. Like, yeah. It doesn't go in. I don't like to read the comments unless I absolutely have to. So they get right. Up to you.
Yeah, and I rarely ever rabbit hole on YouTube. I go there like shopping. I go there, I get my milk and bread, and then I go home. You know, I don't go, let's go browse in this aisle, because you don't know what you're going to find. And you're like, wow, I just wasted an hour trying to figure out what this guy was doing. And then, yeah, no, I'm in and I'm out.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I do too, but I know lots of people that use it as a, like, their main entertainment source. And that's fine. It's just not how I use it, I guess. I mean, honestly, like, no, music and podcasts are my main forms of, it's audio for me more than video. And when I want to watch a video, I'll watch one, but you know, most of my entertainment is audio for me.
Well, and I think it's a generational thing, too. I mean, I know you're younger than me, but you're still to the point that you didn't grow up with YouTube.
Right.
As opposed to, like, my son, who grew up on YouTube, and everything is YouTube. I mean, he's on it, you know, it's like Snapchat. He's on that constantly, and I think we aged out of those, you know, so that's probably one of the reasons, too.
You might be right. I mean, I remember when YouTube first became a thing, and I was like, this is great. Anybody can put whatever they want on here. And I, you know, I got a lot of mileage out of it even early on, but I still used it the same way. It was like, how to change spark plugs in a whatever, you know? Yep. And then found it. Okay, there's my information. You know, and then of course, it materialized into watch Andy play fuzz pedals. I could rabbit hole that for a while. I have done that. Yeah.
I have done that. I've gone on like a pedal safari, and then normally you get about 4 or 5 videos, but I've been on ones that were, oh my God, there's 20 videos on this pedal, and I'll just go through all of them, you know, and by that time it's like, it's 11 o'clock at night, and I think my wife went to bed, or I was like, oh man, I gotta go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. There was lots of times, you know, at my old job where, you know, some of the main part of the job was just making sure nothing was going to explode. So as long as nothing weird was happening, you were kind of free to read, you know, this isn't at all times. This is just during certain activities.
Sure.
But like, you were kind of free to like, you read a book or, you know, watch training videos or get on YouTube or whatever, as long as you could get to the shutdown button in a timely fashion. You know, that's all that was required. And so, yeah, I did do some pretty deep dive, especially early on when I found out pedal demos were a thing. Like, whoa, like just pouring through Pro Guitar Shop videos and you know, Mike Herman's and all the ones that were kind of like the first generation of, you know, well-known YouTube review guys, I guess. Or demo guys, rather.
I think mine was more along the lines of, I think I didn't get a computer, I think, until like 97 or 98, I think. And my thing was, going to all the sites that had schematics. I still have ring binders, 4 or 5 of them that are probably 150 pages in each, you know, which was funny because if you think about it, it's like, well, it is the internet. That stuff will still be on there, Sean, you know, but you know, I'm just like, I need this in paper form. But, that was my thing. That was my deep dive was, you know, and it was, you know, I started when I got out of school, I got out about the same time where, you know, you had, you know, the big three, boutique guys were coming out, you know, and, they were starting to take some of those older designs and doing the things that, you know, I eventually started going into about, let's take this and let's fix this part of it. Let's increase this, blah, blah, blah. And now you can't find this anymore, but guess what? Now you can, and we're selling it. So.
Right. So that you said something interesting there. You said the big three as far as, you know, quote unquote boutique. Who around that time would you consider to be the big three?
In my eyes. Well, I would definitely say, Keeley was there only because he did that compressor. There was a lot of stuff going on with that. And then there's, obviously, Mike, you know, doing his thing.
Mike Fuller.
You know, he was doing his thing, and then there's, you know, the king of just doing it the right way. Boy, I just had a brain fart. he has the sun face, and he has the
Analog Man.
Thank you, Analog Man.
Analog Mike.
Those guys were the big three for me at the time. And then there was obviously like the dozens of guys like Justin Philpott, you know, just, there was, you know, Aaron and all those guys were had these websites. And I tell you what, I am saddened by the fact that Aaron Nelson, people should give him residuals. I swear. I mean, that guy selflessly gave out all this info about being a, you know, hobbyist pedal builder. And a lot of these guys took that info and, you know, he put it out there. But they started companies. And if it wasn't for him, yeah, it'd be crazy. I mean, it wouldn't be like it is what it is right now.
Now, I'm actually not familiar with that name as far as what you're talking about. What website did he run?
He ran, he did GeoFX.
Okay, got it. I know. Yeah.
I mean, really comes down to like, well, good example. Everybody came out with, you know, a FET booster. You know, it's like, this, you know, in either a part of a circuit or is just the whole circuit itself. And he's the guy that was doing it first, you know, and everyone took his designs and they did their thing. And that's what a lot of pedal builders do, you know, you borrow a little here, borrow a little there. I mean, nothing is original. I like to try to tell people that there's always some degree of some kind of part of a circuit just because you need to amplify something. You need to have the circuit involved, you know.
But well, like there's only so many ways to create gain or amplify the signal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's only so many ways you can do that. So to me, I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, I think there's aspects that are just commonplace to a circuit. But, you know, there was a lot of people that borrowed from him. And he put it out there. And I don't know. I just feel bad that he tried to do a really good thing and still does. You know, some people took advantage of it.
Right. Right. And it seems like that, you know, it's been that way with basically any of the DIY guys, like mm-hmm. the ones that kind of provide a community or a, you know, they're well known in the DIY world. It's like inevitably someone's going to take that and do something with it. Sometimes I wonder how much of it is like I'm going through this on a different project right now. And it's not a big deal, but it's like two guys came to the same idea at the same time on some aesthetics. And mm-hmm. like they didn't talk to each other. They didn't do, you know, like neither right. knew what the other was doing, but they both released something like right around the same time or talked about it or something. I can't remember. They found out about it and they looked at it. And they're like, these look identical. Like, they neither had a clue. So what I'm saying is I wonder how much of it is, you know, people having the same idea at the same time versus actually directly taking it.
No, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there's, you know, only a certain amount of ways you can do something. So, and the same thing with aesthetically. I mean, it's like you're bound to kind of run into somebody else doing the same thing. Very honestly, just because, you know, especially in this day and age. I mean, I think with the new culture of part companies that, you know, specialize for the DIY community,
right?
There's, you know, 1959 BB, you know, Hammond box. There's only so many things you can do with that thing, you know.
So right.
It's colors. I mean, basically, and there's only what? How many primary colors? So, you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we got a huge rainbow to work with, but some of them don't look good. So
no, like, no.
You know, you're trying to make a product that's going to appeal to customers. I don't know, like. I used to really be critical of some of that stuff, like, oh, this guy ripped this guy off, and sometimes they did,
right.
But sometimes it's just by chance, you know. I'm having, you know, like I said, kind of seen it firsthand now. It's like, wow, this was just really two guys that both came up with a really good idea at the same time.
I'm not trying to degrade the builder force. I'm just, you know, that can happen. But yeah, like you said, a lot of it is, you know. And another thing is like a song. Like if say you heard a song when you were like 10 years old, whatever, and you had this chord progression in your head from that song, and then you're 16 and you're writing a song. And you're like, yeah, I like this riff. It's just really great. And then you don't realize subconsciously you incorporated that melody that you heard maybe once or twice. And you're like, I just wrote a song that sounds like Stairway to Heaven. What the heck was I thinking? You know. And I think the same thing with when you look at so many circuits, you know, you're bound to get some ideas, you know, and maybe you don't even realize it. You know, so I think for the most part, I mean, we're pretty lucky. The builder community, for the most part, is really super strong, and it's very proactive, and it's also very communicative. It's a lot of, you know, the community, the talking, the helping out. You know, I don't know what it is in the other type of building schemes of guitars or amps or anything like that, but the builders are usually very selfless and tend to be very sensitive about certain things, you know, like, hey, you know, I didn't mean to step on your toes, you know, I'm totally cool with changing that name or whatever. And that allows us not to have many problems, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for the most part, you know, we've talked about that a lot on here. It's just there's always some rotten apples, but the community by and large in just kind of, you know, boutique effects and gear in general for the most part, is pretty positive. I mean, there's a few things here and there, but it's nothing like other industries where it's...
No, not at all. No, yeah. Not at all. And there's even a lot of, a lot of guys helping the other guys. You know, like, I'm not a modulation guy. So if I was thinking about maybe doing a modulation thing, of course I'm going to talk to some of my friends that has done modulation stuff, you know.
Of course.
To give me some insight, or where should I look, what should I start on, blah, blah, blah. And that's very much, you know, looked well upon in our community. So, yeah, we don't usually have a problem with that. And that's one of the reasons, having this as a business, as a side business, is great. Because I do electronics for my day job. And one of the reasons why I did like an old school thing with the Canalia, with the point to point and all that, is I literally deal with components that look like pepper on a daily basis. They're so small. Wow. Yeah, it's a lot of, SMD stuff. So I'm taking my love of what I like to do. I'm just kind of flipping it on its side and doing something different so I don't burn out. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do, the point to point. Wanted to do a discrete overdrive and have, like, you know, the old school thing, but with new school technology to, you know, secure it and make it even better than it would have been back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So how you deal with things the size of pepper? Like, how do you solder a grain of pepper?
Oh, man, it's not easy. Well, and a lot of that stuff we have sent out, so I don't have to do a lot of it. If I do, it's usually because I have to repair something. And the problem with solder and the problem with heat is that solder likes to follow heat. So when you solder something and you have your tip on that solder and you try to pull that tip away, you're going to pull the part away. So there's a lot of trying to stage something to hold the part down so you can pull away from it. I deal with small components every day. And I also deal with, like, you know, QFPs, quad flat packs, 130 pin chips and such. Yeah. And I love it. I love what I do. But I also don't want to take it home. And
right.
So we decided we wanted to do that with Canalia, and we just thought it was a good look, and we went with that. With our new release, we are going to stick with the outside being still wood, but we are going to be using a PCB inside. And that allows us a couple things. It allows us to reduce the price because it is a intricate circuit, and it also allows us to, because we're only introducing one color, and our cherry box fuzz, it'll be one color, so we will actually be shelving these units. So when you want one, it gets shipped. So one of the downsides of doing custom stuff like we do with the Canalia, sometimes at the very most, it's usually not more than 2 weeks. And lots of times it's way below that. But, people buy something and they want it. And I know I do. So we made a decision that we, you know, and Colette came down with the design. We're doing a slope front. It's going to be reminiscent of the Gary Hurst, tone bender. We have a really cool, and we're doing it out of hickory, which people are very confused by. But the thing about hickory is it's an open grain wood. And if you do a first coat of translucent black and then do the red on top, the black will soak into that grain and it makes the grain really pop. So on top of it being a little bit of a cheaper wood, so that again brings our prices down. It's a more durable wood, and the aesthetic value on it's insane. I mean, Colette worked for almost a month and a half just trying to get a color match that we really liked. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be awesome. And like I said, we can put it on the shelf and then, you know, ship next day or at least in 2 days. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to keep some of our brand, if for the most part right now, is based on we're the people that do wooden enclosures.
Right.
So we want to keep that, but we also want to adapt and grow and, you know, be able to, you know, fine tune things so we can get stuff out to the public in a timely manner and still have a really great product.
Mm-hmm. That'll be cool. I think that's a good move. You know, like you said, people are used to Amazon and they buy things and they want it right now. And I totally get it. Like you said, I do the same thing. I don't really want to wait too much, you know, too terribly long.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, for what you do it, I think the Canalia will always, you know, make sense to have around for the most part. You know, you just build them as you have capacity and people like that custom touch. But the Cherry Box, that concept, it'll be really interesting to see what that does for your brand. I think it's the right move.
Yeah, and the fact that we're, you know, and I know a lot of people say this, but for the most part, both our designs, our Cherry Box and our Canalia, are at least the way we're implementing, are pretty original. I mean, obviously, like I said, nothing's totally original, but the way we're implementing them, they're pretty unique designs. So I'm really excited about releasing a fuzz that doesn't sound like not many fuzzes on the market right now. It's giving you the smoothness and the bottom of a muff, but has a lot more mid in it, and it's a lot smoother, but also having the additive oscillation circuit and tuning that in, you can also get your Velcro thing and do a bunch of stuff. So it's a very flexible fuzz that's has some really unique textures and sounds and tones. And I'm really thinking a lot of people are going to dig it. I know we do. And I've worked on this damn pedal for 4 years now. And I got to learn how to let go of things. So I finally did.
Just fun. You just wanted a little bit more of something, a little tweak here, a little tweak. I think I can get it to do this. Like,
yep.
Sometimes it's time to be done. I know what you mean.
Well, and there's a lot of times where, and you know this, is like, you get your amp dialed in, it sounds great. Okay, I'm going home for the night. Come in the morning. This amp sounds like garbage.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what happened?
Yeah. What happened? The gremlins came in, you know? It's, yeah, you know, a lot of it has to do with your ear. So you can get ear fatigue. And so basically, I'm done. This is it. This is what we're going to have. But, I mean, it's a really flexible fuzz. We're going to do a pre-release on it at the end of the month.
We'll
be announcing that. Yeah, we are going to do a pre-release on it, mainly because there's a lot of people that one thing about being a small company is you get to be friends with a lot of people that have, you know, that you have gotten products to. So this is really for our core of people that have supported us and has spread the word. So, you know, they can get in at a really great price that we will never, ever, ever sell again at this price. And then, you know, get to the people that, you know, supported us. And then, you know, we'll have a release soon after that. And so, yeah, we're really excited about that.
That's very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I know you've been working on that thing for a long time. You kind of sent me little snippets here and there for... I mean, I didn't know it was 4 years, but the last year or so, I've known of its existence, I think. So I know you've been working on it for quite some time. I didn't know that it was almost finally, like, coming around the corner, so good timing.
Yeah. And like I said, a lot of it, the circuit's been done probably for about 2 months, 3 months now. A lot of it was just trying to, I mean, we decided we wanted to do a different type of enclosure. So it's not like you just get on the CNC machine and, you know, let's cut something. You know, there's a lot of design, you know, a lot of figuring out, okay, can this pot go here? Well, there's a jacks in the way, so I can't do that. And then, like I said, the concept, and once Colette got that done, you know, doing the coloring as well. So yeah, really, we're right around the corner, and I need to send out a few for some our demo peeps. And as soon as they get them and they get their stuff in the can, then we're gonna make our release date, our pre-release date known.
Nice. That's very cool.
We want people to hear it before they. It's like, looks great, but you know, a lot of people want to hear what something looks like, or you know, hear it too. So we want to make sure the whole package is out there so people can make a, you know, decision on what they think it's up their alley or not.
Right, right. And you know what? I gotta say, I really love Demo Guys. They've completely changed the buying experience for guitar pedals, because I can almost, like, if there's enough demos by enough guys, I can almost guarantee if I'm going to like something or not. Like, yeah. Well, without yeah, or fail. At least
you'll know, like, okay, I can still have interest in this because what I'm hearing is, you know, or as opposed to, I think that would be cool. And then you see two or three demos, you're like, this is just not my thing, you know? It helps.
It's really helpful. And plus, you know, all the ones that, like, you or I would point anyone to send stuff to, like, there's so many good players. It's just another outlet to hear. It's kind of weird to think about, but it's actually another outlet just to hear music at times. You know, you listen to the pedal, but it's like, there's a song, you know, who doesn't like listening to songs. So
that's true.
The internet's weird. Like, we were talking about YouTube comments and stuff being atrocious, but like overall, you know, let's stuff like this happen. And, you know, let's the communities kind of pop up and be able to engage with people you never would have talked to otherwise. So it's just like, I don't know. I think overall the internet's a good thing. We just have to figure out how to not be jerks on it, and then we'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the most part, the internet's a really good thing. You know, it's just, hey, we got to be cool with each other. And sometimes, you know, if you don't feed the dog, it won't bug you. You know what I mean?
It's true. It's very true. Yeah. This is funny. This is like, I told you I was recording a Chasing Tone earlier with Brian, and we had the same kind of conversation. Like I think the internet is still such a new way of communicating that some people still haven't figured out that you can't yell and call people names and scream at them on the internet and think everyone's going to be okay with it. Because, like, how often do you walk through a store and see people doing that?
Like, exactly. Yeah,
you could totally disagree with that guy, but like, you're not gonna say anything to him because, you know, you could end up in a fist fight. It's just somehow with this cushion.
Yeah, know. And before it was like the concept of it was, well, you had all this anonymity, but even now when things are really open, people still are, because it's kind of like, I'm 2,000 miles from you, you know. So I'm just going to say whatever I want to say, and I don't care who you, if you know me or not, I'm never going to meet you again or whatever, you know. I think just people need to, you know, take a little bit of stock and just being a human and treating people like humans and not, and I get heated. I've said some preheated things before, but for the most part, I'm not a huge instigator. I think to me, those are people that are either lonely or bored or both. And I just don't, I'm not into that.
Yeah. And I honestly sometimes think it's people don't necessarily know, like, I've talked to a lot of guys that like, even when you talk to them, it's super cool, but like sometimes they don't realize how they sound when they're or how it appears when they're typing.
That's something. True.
Like,
that's true.
The emojis were invented for a reason. Like, sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes you can't detect sarcasm. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I mean, you can if you sort of know the person.
Right.
But if you don't and you can't hear the sound of their voice, you don't know. Like, they could be making a joke and you think they're calling you something horrible when they're totally not. I don't know. It's a it's a weird thing. I still think that it's such a foreign way to communicate for people that we haven't, as humans, totally figured out how to use it yet. Because for whoever knows how many years, the internet didn't exist. You had to talk on the phone or face-to-face. Like, an angry letter was as close as you could get to an internet message. And yeah, people still had to take time and think about those when they were writing them.
And a lot of it, you know, body language and tone of voice really come into play on, somebody's true, you know, whether someone is, you know, I can tell this person's pissed at me, even though they're saying they're not pissed at me, you know.
Right.
Yeah, as opposed to when you write it down, it could be anything, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, bless your heart, John. Like, uh-oh, what's that mean?
Yeah, what's that mean? He hates me.
He actually wants to murder me in my sleep. Oh, bless your heart.
You're like, oh, no.
See me? I'm going to see that guy outside my window with a shotgun. I just know it. You bless my heart.
You bless my heart. And I hope to die.
I don't hope to.
I hope not home to either.
Let's see. I know you and I have talked about a lot, but I know that we are similarly passionate about food.
Yes.
And I know we mostly talk about pizza on here, and we'll get to that. But I seem to recall that you're quite the barbecue fan as well, and so am I. So
yes,
is that an accurate statement?
That's very and well. And we need to step back. For our friends that are in the South, we are passionate about grilling.
Oh,
because barbecue is one thing, grilling is quite another. And
this is a good point. Good point.
I have friends and family, and you don't say barbecue when you're grilling. Although I don't care, but they obviously do. But so yes, we're big fans of grilling.
Grilling, yes. And I mean, I am a big fan of barbecue, although I probably do it in the cheating way with a pellet smoker. So yeah. I don't know how legit that is for the Southern listeners. Does it need to be in like legit, a pit?
Nah, it doesn't have to be. I mean, if it tastes legit, and I'm not, there are a lot of people that have a tendency to want to pick on the nth degree. My thing is, if you're making something you dig and it tastes good and you like it, that's all that matters. I mean, half of the thing about barbecuing or grilling or whatever is that you're creating something and you're outside. And like here in Michigan, we grill 365. I mean, I'm in February, I'm out in my grill, grilling chicken breast because I just enjoy it and that's what I like.
Same here.
Yeah. So it's about enjoying the weather, enjoying what you're doing. And then the food is just the bonus part. That's the great thing.
It's an oddly satisfying thing to, bring in, you know, whatever it happens to be. I really like cooking brisket and stuff and pork and whatever. But like when you bring that in, everyone's like, "Ooh, yeah. Time to go." Yeah. It's like it's very weird sense of accomplishment. Like,
well,
something I never really thought about till recently.
Well, and I think a lot about part of it is that we as a society, and I'm not trying to make this let's pick on humanity day, but we as a society are so ingrained in our head to get things now. Mm-hmm. And part of grilling to me is like, it's the anticipation of the amount of work that you're putting into it. So when you sit down and you eat this meal, it tastes better, not just because you cooked it or you have a great marinade, but it tastes better because you had to be involved with this meal, as opposed to when you go to McDonald's, you're not at all involved with anything that goes in that meal. And simply not just because it doesn't taste good, but it even tastes that much worse because the fact that you didn't do anything with this, you know?
That's a good point. I think sometimes the labor is a reward in and of itself. And that applies with a lot of things, you know? Yeah. You know, whether you're building pedals or, you know, building my son's tree fort. It's like, get done and look at the thing. It's like, yep, I did that. It's like a weird, I think it's like a weird human thing. Cause like everybody, like, you know, you can do like work on the internet and like digitally and stuff. And it's, is legitimate and difficult work at times, you know, graphic design and all that stuff. But sure. Like sometimes like a physical thing that you've put together, you get done and it's like, yep, all the plumbing works now. As much as that wasn't fun, when you turn the faucet on and it works, it's kind of like, ha, look at that.
Yeah, I have accomplished something, especially if it's something you haven't done before. You know, like, I didn't think in my right mind that I would be able to do that. And I did, and okay, that's another thing that I could put in my toolbox that I know how to do, or at least have an idea of how to do it. So, it's like when you buy your first amp, you know, your first really good amp. I remember I saved money for a long, long, long time. So when you bought that amplifier, I mean, there was an amount of blood, sweat, and tears that went in getting that amp. I mean, it's like, you know, working at really bad jobs, dealing with friends that had better gear and you were saving up. So when you purchased that gear purchase, it just made you appreciate it that much more, as opposed to someone giving it to you, which is cool, but it doesn't have that sentimental value or that pricelessness of that piece of gear because of what you put into it.
Yeah, I think it's that way for, I think it's literally that way for anything. Anything that you've tried really hard to achieve or get or do, versus it kind of falling from the sky, like universally, I can think of things with myself. That's like things I had to work really hard for, definitely take better care of and, you know, and think about more and care about more than just, you know, random freebies, you know, like, and like you say, it's good. It's nice. But, and I'm not just talking about gear. I'm talking about like everything, anything you have to work totally really hard for is much more enjoyable somehow. Just because of the fact that you did.
Yep.
I didn't think we were going to go there with the grilling conversation, but I like it anyway. I'm glad we did.
No, it's really cool. I just think it's, more people need to have that point of view, I think, you know, look at the journey. Don't look at the destination sometimes.
That's true. And I think that most people inherently know that in their bones. It's just not something that is thought about. Mm-hmm. Like, I think almost anybody can point to something in their life that they had to put in some sweat for. And they, you know, they know what we're talking about. I think everyone knows what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
So we are getting to near the end since we didn't talk about this yet, but well, you and I have talked about it many times, but the listeners haven't. So Sean, what kind of pizza do you like?
All right. I have two answers for this. Okay. And I need to be cut a little bit slack because I'll explain it to you in a second.
Okay.
My favorite pizza is, I'm a big margarita fan. Okay.
Okay.
And my buddy Paulie has an outside, superly efficiently engineered pizza oven.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he has, you know, wood in it, and he doesn't use any external or internal heating. He chops his wood, he puts it in, it takes about 2 hours to get up to heat. And I have a video somewhere, I should post it again. We cooked a pizza in 90 seconds.
Oh, I remember that. It was like a year ago or something.
Yeah, it got up to about 800 degrees. So he brings the peel out. He peels it out to the on the bricks, shakes it around maybe once or twice to the sides because the fire is off to the left. Mm-hmm. But that to me, the ingredients, his dough, his sauce, but that taste you can't get away from. Mm. So I gotta say that's my favorite. Regular pizza at like a pizza joint and stuff. You know what? I am not a purist. I like a salad on my pizza, and I know people just, they dog me for it, but I'm the big supreme guy. I like, you know, I like my peppers, I like my onions. Hamburger does not belong on a pizza. It does not belong on a pizza. Oh, anyone who right. thinks so is wrong. It doesn't belong on a pizza.
I'm wrong. But,
yes. But mushrooms, pepperoni, sausage, you know, and black olives. That's me. Mm. That's my pizza. That's what I like.
I like that too. I would totally eat that pizza. I'm a big fan. You know, I go on both sides of the equation. I'll have pizzas like what you just had. And then mm-hmm. sometimes just pepperoni is what I need. Or just cheese if I'm like, I could do just cheese and like a good New York slice.
That's the thing. You can do like a really, like, you know, my buddy Paulie makes very mm-hmm. simplistic pizzas, but it's okay because you're having the great bread. You know, you got the sauce and you got some cheese and some basil and some tomato slices, and that's it. That's all you need, and it tastes like heaven. So it just depends on what kind.
Can I come to Paulie's house?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He also makes killer goat cheese too, and we have that on the pizza Ooh. Too. So yeah, he's the bomb.
All of this sounds great to me. I love all of that.
Yeah, other than, like, you know, any fool that puts pineapple on a pizza, I think pretty much anything can be on a pizza.
I mean, what is that even?
Yeah, I'm just taking a dig. Hey, whatever floats your boat on whatever you eat or whatever you cook, I'm all for it, man. As long as it doesn't require you hurting dogs or humans or elephants, put it on your pizza, man.
put it on your pizza. No elephant yep. pizza, though.
Yeah, no elephant pizza, no dog pizza, no human pizza.
Human pizza is the best. You ever tried it?
No. I haven't had long pork.
Oh, I shouldn't have said that on the air. This is going to be awkward. I'm going to have some explaining to do.
You can't
anybody seen Jess? I haven't seen him in a while.
Oh. Yeah. Where is that guy?
That got weird. But that's what we do around here. Well, Sean, that's do you right. have any last little thoughts, notes, things that people should know about you or about your company or about anything? This is your moment to shine.
You know, we have been basically a one pedal company for a while now, and that was by design. We are going to be releasing 4 pedals in the next year. When obviously it's coming up here soon, we'll have another release at the end of summer, and then we'll have 2 releases, one probably around after Christmas, and then one about this time next year. So we are going to turn into a multi-pedal company. So get ready, because here we come.
That's awesome. Awesome. Yep. Well, where can everyone find you and your stuff? Where do they go on the internet?
You go on the interwebs. We have our Facebook, Lyle Gager Effects. We are on Instagram, which is our favorite social media platform, Lyle Gager Effects. And then you can go to our website, www.lyleeffects.com.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Sean. We've been trying to do this for a long time. I'm finally glad that we were finally able to make it happen.
So yeah, me you. Too. Hey, man, we got it's a busy world, man. You do what you can do.
Yep. Well, we finally did it. We finally did
yes.
it.
Yes.
All right, folks. Well, for Sean, this is Blake. And as always, good luck and good tones. All right, folks. That does it for this episode. As always, thank you very much for tuning in. Been getting a lot of good feedback lately, and that brings a little warm and fuzziness to the old heart. So keep it coming. If you need anything, if I can be of any assistance, feel free to reach out on all the socials or info@tonemob.com. I'll try to be of service in any way that I can. But thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to check out the Facebook group if you're feeling like you want a little more fuzz in your life. That's what we're there for. So it's just The Tone Mob. You'll find it. You know, we have a few questions to try to keep the spam bots out, and then you're in and partying. So have yourself a good one. Talk to you next time. One last thing before we totally sign off here.
I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.